offense builds up here. Beautiful ball through. Challenge inside the 18. Brickman strikes, and Brickman scores! Mfeka now the takeaway. Mfeka rolls wide. Central feed comes to Vermela! Here is Rodriguez. Rodriguez dragged from behind. They play the advantage. 2-on-2, Rodriguez slips it through. It's Reno looking for the third, and he has it.
Welcome to Roots Pod, an audio production of Roots Blog and member of the Rootscast Broadcast Network. This is Aaron here with John and Peter after a week break because life got in the way. But fortunately, there's a lot of good soccer to talk about. Would have been pretty depressing to come back and talk about four really mediocre games. But in fact, the Roots and the Soul did us a solid the last two weeks. So this will be a much more optimistic podcast than what we left you with 2 weeks ago, for sure. We've had two Soul games now, the first two Soul games of their existence. We've also had two Roots games the past 2 weeks. We'll get to those in a bit. We're going to start with the Oakland Soul. Their two wins. The first one was over Stockton Cargo out in, Stockton, I guess. First half goals from Nayeli Diaz and then a brace from Ceci G were enough to take Oakland Soul to a win in their inaugural match. There were two Stockton Cargo goals, but that's obviously two is less than three. That's the most math we're going to do here. Two is less than three.
Usually less than three.
Usually, yeah, right. And then in their inaugural home match, the Soul beat Olympic Club 1-0 off a 63rd minute goal from Caitlin Brinkman. So all in all, a pretty darn good start to the season. In fact, John, one of the things you put on the blog is that we can kind of expect in a league like this, this pre-professional structure, that there's going to be a pretty wide variance in team quality. And after two games, it's pretty clear, that to the extent that's true, the Soul are going to be on the positive side of that gulf. 2-1 goal wins, but I didn't see the Stockton game, but they pretty much controlled play against the Olympic Club. You know, 1-0 really flatters the Olympic Club, all things mm-hmm. considered, I think.
Yeah, I think that result is kind of a testament to their coach. Really, JT Hanley is a longtime coach here in the Bay Area, near 30 years. He's been at Archbishop Mitty for 16 years. Before that, he was at Bishop O'Dowd here in Oakland for 11 years. Won 8 titles with Bishop O'Dowd. With Mitty, including 4 straight open division titles. So the open division in high school sports is always reserved for the upper echelon teams, the best teams. There's an end of season meeting and they decide which the best, 8 teams are. And then they put them into the open division. So that says a lot about him as a coach, but that was all we could really find out about them. Peter's found they have, what was it? A $20,000 tuition they have to pay.
Olympic Club. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not sure what the athletes are, but they were a big mix of age. What I think I was told the youngest player was 22. So that says a lot. Maybe they've been playing, together for longer, but for them to kind of hold through the first half, I thought that said a lot about how Hanley had them prepared, saying, okay, we're going to hold our line, stick in formation. And really that's what he was harping on for the whole game, was like, all right, guys, stay in form. All right, good formation. And then you could tell, like, it was just a matter of Soul finding that niche, wearing them down, and then putting the final punches on in the second half. And yeah, I thought the 1-0 victory, 1-0 result was flattering for Olympic Club. I think it was, three goals maybe left on the field, maybe two more goals left on the field for Seoul. But they are fun. They're fun to watch. And as you mentioned, I think there's going to be some disparity at the top of the league. The three that come to mind are Cal Storm, Seoul, and the Glens. So I'm mostly curious. I know Storm is going to be really good. They've historically been really good. Glenn's is a different kind of topic because they're very young. So I'm very young, but with a lot of skill and a lot of, international talent, actually. So I'm curious to see what the somewhat older minds on Seoul does against this Glenn's team, and we'll see who comes out the best. But that's one game I'm really excited for, actually.
So I got to say, I thought as far as the talent on the pitch there, I mean, Caitlin Brinkman, obviously great game against the Olympic Club. But to me, it was Nayeli Diaz who seems to be really the straw that stirs the Seoul's drink. And they had highlighted Ceci G. I don't, because of her performance against Stockton Cargo, the brace, obviously she's leading the forward line, very important spot on the field, but the sort of the runs Diaz was able to make, I thought you're watching this, and let me put this out there like this. A lot of these players are college age, some a little older, a couple a little younger. And, you know, when you watch the men's college game, one thing that always sticks out to me is that these are all very good athletes, and they're probably athletes who can hang with the athletes in the USL, maybe even MLS. You know, that you see athletes move directly from the college game to MLS and step right in and play. But at the same time, the football itself doesn't look anything like what you see on a USL field or an MLS field, right? It's a lot more reliance on athleticism. But the football that the Seoul were playing looked like what you're just used to seeing. And I thought that was, given the type of league we're talking about, given the age range of the players, I was like, that's pretty impressive, all things considered, because they haven't had that long to play together. They seem to come together and have an understanding of the plan. And I suppose that's kudos to Jess Clinton, right? I mean, that's obviously something is going right on the coaching side of things. But that was, I was very impressed with those players and that I saw from Seoul on the field. Peter, what stuck out to you? Having seen some Seoul soccer now, what stuck out to you, and what are you excited for moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I thought, unsurprisingly, I thought that Sam Tran was making a lot happen, and it wasn't all coming off. But I think that assuming that more time practicing together and playing together makes the players gel better together, I think she's going to create a lot of goals. Cause she had some really great passes that, her teammate didn't read at the right time to make the run on or whatever. I was impressed with the center backs, Urteaga and Shepherd, who I thought were, basically lights out the whole game. I think there were some times that they maybe didn't have full sort of partnership developed with their respective right back and left back. So that is, I think that there was some failure to connect between them and Nild on one side and Yamamoto on the other. But that only seems to have affected them going forward. And, from a center back's point of view, your main job is to make sure that you don't make any mistakes going with the ball coming towards you, and they didn't, no mistakes. Armas had, that one big save, and otherwise she's like barely tested. When the goalkeeper is barely tested, it means the center backs are doing their job, right? Mm-hmm. So those are the things that stuck out to me. I mean, I think in some ways the exciting things were all happening at the other end, but that was, I think, because the Seoul completely shut down Olympic Club's attack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, as Aaron pointed out, Caitlin Brinkman has been, I think, one of the shining lights for me so far through the first two games. I mean, she loves the ball. She loves to shoot. You could tell that she was a forward wherever she was before. And Jessica sees her as a central midfielder. And I think, maybe if she gets to the next level, that is where she could take that step up. Because, I mean, when you think about it, all these girls, a lot of them are, D1 talent, were probably the best players on the field at wherever high school and club they came from. So, of course, you're going to be playing striker. You look at the the roster makeup on this team and how many of them are forwards. You know, even the defenders are former forwards. Miranda Nil comes to mind. I mean, Brinkman is just, she's got a lot of swagger to her. She's the type of player that I would want as a coach. You know, when I think when the lights are bright, she'll turn, you know, turn that next level on, turn her swag on and just start ripping shots. I think her shooting ability and free kick ability could put her on the Roots team, honestly, right now. Just someone who can line up these free kicks with accuracy and put 100% power on them, and they stay low to the ground. Like, you see some of my photos, they pass the eye test, you know, for sure. You see the trajectory of her shots, and they are not sailing. They have, you know, a great angle, staying low to the ground and just hovering there. Really impressed with her, that she's been a really good player so far.
It's a bold statement, John. But you're not wrong. I mean, a lot of things have been very positive. A lot of things have gone right. The Soul have a couple of days off. They do not play next weekend. They play again in Oakland at Merritt College against Academica on May 28th. You might remember Academica for hosting a preseason scrimmage for the Roots last year. Their team has played two matches against the SF Glens, who John mentioned as being somebody he's watching out for, and they got pasted both times, a 7-0 and 5-0 Glens win. So this will be maybe something of a measuring stick. You know, if Soul can match up against Academica the same way Glens did, then maybe that tells you something. Although I do sort of wonder, in most soccer matches, after you get to a 3-goal victory, like, anything beyond that is sort of gravy, but possibly a good measuring stick. Things are looking up, though. I mean, what a statement start to their inaugural season, right? I mean, you think back to the Roots' first season in the USL, the beginning wasn't anything like this. You know, I think there was a win in there. I think they got 4 points out of their first three matches, but that's not what anyone knows the beginning of the Roots' time in the USL for. So,
or NISA.
So, I mean, what a great way to start. What a great way to start. So, speaking of the Roots,
can I one more point on the
Soul, go ahead.
Which is, I have questions about the Roots' reported attendance for the two games at 5,800, but you know, for context, in this, you know, if Soccer Stadium Digest can be believed, in 2022 there were 4 NWSL teams that averaged under 5,800 attendees per game. So, you know, I think that the Roots and Soul number may have been inflated last week, but assuming everyone inflates their numbers the same amount, the Soul, you know, had an opening game that puts them competitive with NWSL. And, you know, they're not going to keep that up at Merritt College, which only seats a couple thousand people, if that, but, you know, the town showed up for the Soul. That was awesome.
It really was. I mean, replay the goal from Brinkman, and you just hear how loud it got. I think it's going to be the envy of a lot of other players in this league to see that reaction. You know, a lot of these girls have never played in front of a crowd like this. I mean, you gotta, you know, to put yourself in their shoes, like, what a moment for them. I mean, to look up at these stands and see all these people watching them and cheering for them. I mean, it's got to be a great experience. And the fans are showing out and are going to keep showing out. I mean, and are showing up to road games. Look at even Stockton. There's probably like 100 or so Soul fans there.
You know, it's nice being in a sort of a regional league for that reason specifically. Mm-hmm. It's nice that the USL is national, that we get to play a lot, place teams from a lot of different places, but road games are kind of fun. Road matches are fun, and you're going to get, well, a handful of them with the Soul. I mean, it's not like the season goes on forever, but they're also not playing very far away, so there's always that possibility. So let's talk about the Roots now. And speaking of getting to play all over the country, The first match of two to talk about, 4-1 over Birmingham Legion on the road at Birmingham. It's basically two penalty goals. Formella's penalty in the third minute of first half stoppage time, and then Mafeka's goal off the rebound on a penalty, and then the icing on the cake, Trayvon Reed in the 71st, Johnny in the 88th. Of course, all of those goals happened while the Roots were on the power play. So I said this in my prediction on the blog. I was like, I don't know how much we can take from this, because I watched the first part of that match before turning it over to the Golden State Warriors playoff game, and it was as boring as the Miami match was. It was like nothing had changed, and great, you scored a bunch while up against a team that was down a man. That's fine, whatever. But they came back home on May the 13th to play Orange County, and admittedly, Orange County is not good this year, right? That they've already undergone a coaching change. They did not show a whole lot on Saturday, but 3-0. I mean, well, how nice is it to have just a boring 3-0 win? I don't think that's something we've ever experienced as Oakland Roots fans. You know, that like the Indy 11 win came out of nowhere, and it was kind of still in jeopardy at one point. But this was just like the Roots controlled this from minute one to minute 90. Formel in the 30th, Murad in the 43rd, and Rito in the 78th. Obviously a clean sheet. The Roots seem to have righted the ship. You know, we were worried there for a while. We looked at them in the table. They were fifth. We're like, how high can we go? Can they go fourth? Can they go third? And they responded by playing terribly over the next couple of weeks. And the last two games, it's seven goals in two games. How about that? Now, let me just say, and I'll start this for discussion purposes, and John, you can respond first. Again, they did nothing at even strength against Birmingham. It was bad. The penalty was defensible, but I'm not sure it was really nailed on. Like, the guy was turning away. His hands were pretty close to his side. I understand why the penalty was given. The game sort of, at that point, you know, all bets were off. Great. You scored a bunch of goals. Well, really, you scored two goals from open play against a team that only had 10 men. Orange County is terrible, okay? It's great that the Roots can play well when they're on top, but do these games really tell us anything about what the Roots are going to look like when they're facing stiffer opposition?
Ooh, I mean, we will get an immediate answer to that coming up this weekend. But, I mean, you have to admit, you know, Formella is building into the role. He's got a lot of trust there. And, you know, the same can be said about Rito. It seems that, I mean, my takeaway from Tamakis shifting to the wingback role is, and Rito going up, was the Tamakis experiment at the right center back role was not working. We wanted to push him up, and it left the defense completely strung out. And Rito wants to push up as it is, so it's, you know, doubly strung out. So, I mean, you have some defensive reliability with Tamakis there, and then you allow Rito, you know, to go forward. I agree with you guys. I mean, we've all said it, that we don't think his speed is fully utilized at right wing compared to wing back. But, I think this is something I wrote that I could see happening in the preseason, was Rito shifting up into the forward role. But, you know, positives we can take. I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, you look at the Eastern Conference, and it's like each one of them are getting pummeled by a Western Conference team. Charleston just got beat 7-0. Louisville lost 5-0 to Sacramento at the start of the season. Now Birmingham, the number three team, these are 1-3. Birmingham lost by 3 goals to Oakland Roots. So maybe that the Western Conference is just super strong again.
Yeah, I mean, to underscore that briefly, yeah, no one has a goal differential in the East better than two.
And it's
like three teams.
Three teams.
The top three teams in the table in the East have negative goal differentials at this point in the season. There are, I think, five teams who have a goal differential of better than two in the West. Let's see. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sacramento, El Paso, San Antonio, San Diego, and Oakland. Mm-hmm. And then Monterey has two exactly. So, yeah, right now it looks like the West is superior to the East.
Once again. I mean, last year was a big example of that. I mean, all the coaches talked about it, just how strong the West was. But, I mean, it's hard to gripe at this. You know, like, we have to mention this is the best start in franchise history. You know, there's no, you know, we can't downplay that. It almost feels spoiled to be complaining at this. You know, like, you go up a man on Birmingham, you still concede one, but you kill the game. That's a positive. You take in Orange County, a team you should beat the shit out of, and you beat the shit out of them. So that's a positive. Now you're going into the best team in the league. This is tough. Actually, this is a very tough stretch coming up. You know, Sacramento, you have to remind me who's next, but a lot of playoff teams.
Sacramento, Loyal, Switchbacks, Phoenix. It's like four in a row against at least cusp level teams in the Western Conference.
So, hey, I mean, we're have a game in hand on the two teams above us. A win goes a long way, but I will take a draw against Sacramento. Anyways, continue.
Well, so, I mean, I wasn't overly impressed with the Birmingham result, and I mean, I expressed as much, but I think that, you know, now looking at three games in a row, you know, not three clean sheets in a row, but a clean sheet in Miami and a clean sheet against Orange County, it's much easier to look at that first half in Birmingham and say, well, the Roots offense wasn't doing anything, but you're on the road against at least an Eastern Conference playoff team. You know, Birmingham are not as strong as they appeared at the time. Like, they have three losses in a row. But if you go on the road and you put up a clean sheet in the first half against, you know, a playoff level team in the East, great. 1 point there is probably fine. Show that you can control, you know, if not control the game, you can at least prevent getting hurt. And part of why you do that is because sometimes you get a bullshit red card and then you get to win. Or the other team gets a bullshit red card. And then, you know, I mean, I think John's point is well taken about the Orange County match. It was a lot of fun beating Orange County, you know, comfortably at home. Is a necessary but not sufficient result for the team that the Roots want to be. But, you know, I mean, still, you still have to do those. You know, you can't walk through them blind or, you know, you don't, sorry, walk through them asleep, because then you don't actually get the points. And yeah, it is a test coming up against Sacramento.
Let me ask you this. You had said at one point, I think it was the last episode, that you thought that Rito at right wing was a, quote, complete waste of everyone's time. Do you still think that?
Just absolutely called out. Just unbelievable. I mean, I don't know that I have necessarily seen enough to say that I think Rito should be playing at right-sided forward, right wing, whatever. But, like, I mean, it obviously worked in the last game, and I will admit that I was wrong to an extent, but I am not yet fully conceding the point. How about that?
That's totally fair.
Partially,
that's how I feel.
Formella, I think, is doing way better in the holdup role than he was previously. And also, we saw at the end of the Orange County game that Johnny can come on and really do that holdup role.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Formella's passing is better. And I think is increasingly getting better over the course of the season. At least his connections are with the other players. But Johnny came on and just, like, utterly bullied the Orange County center backs, allowing Rito to get into space. And if one of those two things works to get Rito, you know, ball to feet running full speed at goal, then I think Rito is fine at forward. But I think we also saw the limitations that I was talking about in that, which is that Rito one-on-one against the keeper is about a 1 in 3 chance at a goal. And that's not great, because you're not usually going to get three chances like that.
You know, your point about Formella, I think a really important point, I understand why Formella didn't play in the central role last year. Obviously, we had a pretty good center forward last year, but watching him flourish, maybe, I mean, play much better, take his game up a level in the central role this year, makes you wonder why the heck he was utilized the way he was last year. It's just sort of astounding that we stuck him all the way at the touchline and then kind of forgot about him. I don't know how many goals he had last year, but I'm pretty sure he's already got more this year. And we're not even a quarter of the way through the season, or we are a quarter of the way. That's it.
I mean, his most successful role before coming to the Roots was as a second forward in the, like, Dennis Bergkamp style, you know, inside striker behind an out and out nine. And he's doing a lot of those things in his current role. He doesn't have a nine ahead of him, but he's doing a lot of that hold up play. And occasionally, you know, if you lose track of him, he will turn and smoke you. But mostly he's distributing under pressure, which, you know, is great in this sort of, you know, he's not doing it in the box the way that Carlson did. He did it in this sort of middle area between the middle circle and the 18 yard box, but it's creating opportunities. Formella is, it's always so hard because I think that Rito is the best player on the team, to the extent that I think Rito may at some point no longer be an Oakland Root because he may be traded for something. But I want to make the case for Formella as player of the season so far. He's just been so good and so critical to when the Roots have played well. The other, I mean, it also always kind of has to be Paul Blanchett, but who makes standing on his head saves every single game. But, you know, it's those three, and it surprises me that Formella's in that group. It does not surprise me that Rito and Blanchett would be in the conversation for player of the season through 8 games, 9 games.
Yeah, I mean, Formella is an interesting subject because there's a part of me that, like, I wrote it in the blog. I said, I think Formella starting in the nine is a cry for help from Delgado. And some part of me still believes that I think he's great as a center forward. I think he's a more natural on the left side as a winger. And I still think that's where he's best at. And I still think that if he is the number one option at center forward, that means that some things went wrong in the roster building process because this wasn't intended. But I can see how that's a little overcritical right now. I mean, he's playing great. 4 goals, 2 assists. He's already surpassed last year's goal contributions amount. Had 4 goals, 1 assist in 32 appearances. I think that's a great shout, being the early through 9 games, 10 games, the player of the season. If we could do a player of the third of the way, it's him.
Let me ask you this, John. How do you feel about Tomakis as in that more wingback role rather than as a center back?
Yeah, I think it gives that defensive stability, as I touched on earlier. I think how Delgado wanted to use him in that right-sided center back role, kind of coming up as a midfielder / winger, it just left so much behind him. And now as a wing back, he can be more utilized in a variety of ways, so to speak, where he is tracking back as a defender, coming up, sending crosses in, and positioning himself to shoot sometimes. I mean, he almost had a wonderful goal in the 10th minute there, flicked to himself over a player. I mean, it was really special. I wish he would have connected on that one. That would have been ESPN mention, hopefully. But I mean, I like him there. I think we see what Delgado wants out of that side and how they pair together, compared to how they previously had it before, to where they were center back and a wing back, and now wing back to winger. So I mean, we'll see how it goes. I definitely think that has been a new wrinkle that Delgado's putting a lot of emphasis on. So I can't really see it changing, really, honestly, at least in next week or two.
I find it a little frustrating because it seems like Tamakis has the technical ability to succeed as a right-sided wingback, but it feels like his ceiling would that he has a higher ceiling if you can use him as a center back. Because I think his defense is good enough there. It's just not good enough if he's not there, if he's all the way at the other end trying to score goals. And I wish that there was a way to thread that needle. And it seems like, you know, that Delgado tried and it, you know, they were just conceding goals that they didn't need to be conceding. And maybe the stability is better, but it does still feel like something of a missed opportunity if Tamakis can't be doing what he does and also taking a center back spot. And maybe, you know, Hackshaw and Murad have, you know, that Hackshaw has the aerial ability and Murad has the speed to be able to make that transition back to Tamakis being the third guy. But, you know, I don't know.
I mean, it seems to me, and I've said this on the blog a couple of times, the way to do that is to make him a fullback rather than a wingback. But there does not seem to be much appetite for going to a back four right now. I don't know. Let's stipulate that it might actually be a cry for help to put the players in the forward line the way that regardless of the success that they've had in the last two games. Because I think one thing that I kind of take from this discussion is that we're all like, oh, those are great results, but this does not feel like the right mix long term. Another shoe is out there waiting to drop somewhere. Do you see a formation change if they add another forward? Right, there are roster spots out there. You know, we have two international spots that haven't been used. I don't know who you find right now, but Eric Yamamoto found a lot of people in a lot of strange places. So I bet there's someone out there. I think there's got to be domestic roster spots too, right? I mean, this isn't like a full, and maybe it's someone we're not, you know, one of the things that's happened in the last two games that we haven't even touched on, because I think for better and not for worse, for better, he didn't really have a huge impact on the game, or at least a huge noticeable impact, is Daniel Gomez in the midfield, right? I mean, maybe it's someone who's already on the, you know, already at the club somewhere. What's more likely, do you think, John? If they find another forward out there, do they revert back to the way they had it before with Rito as a wingback and Tamakis as the right-sided center back in the back three, or do they change shape? What do you think?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I mean, I know that they're working on multiple formations. You see it in the end of the game when, you know, Pelaez and Johnny are coming on at the same time. That's a tough question, because I definitely think they could use another forward. What I would say is trade both of those spots for Milan Alaski. Maybe we could get him and bring him in from Orange County. I mean, they're in the hole, you know, like, what are they playing for? But but it's hard to say. I don't think you change Rito from where he is, and I don't think you want to change Tamakis from where he is. I think you want to have that consistency between the two. So in that regard, I don't see anything changing where it's not Tamakis feeding Rito, you know what I mean? I definitely think it's going to be those two, you know, Rito and then Tamakis behind him going forward. Bringing in a forward, I mean, I could technically see, you know, Formella going back to left wing and then a new center forward. But then, you know, what do you do with Lindo? Does he become a super sub? It's almost like a waste of talent there.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like the only way to get another forward on the field is to take off a center back, right? I mean, basically. And it seems like, you know, nothing against Gomez. I mean, he has acquitted himself well two games in a row. He's the obvious position to upgrade. You know, like, maybe the more pressing concern than upgrading at the number nine. But, you know, that doesn't actually make us a more attacking team if we get a different eight in place of Gomez, you know? Mm. So I don't exactly know what the answer is. I had also had my eye on Milan Olaski. I'll take back all the terrible things I said about him.
Was he the one that did the robot celebration over here? Or am I thinking of someone else?
That might be him.
It was really bad.
The Roots should switch to the old WM formation from the 1940s and run five forwards. I think that's the future of this team. Five forwards and five defenders, no midfield.
The team is made up primarily of midfielders, and you want to run mostly forwards.
Yes.
Well, yeah. In this case, we're calling Mefeka a forward. No. And I think that we reclassify Metsoso as a defender. Hmm.
Well, regarding Gomez, I think him playing there was more out of necessity than him winning the job. I think Donaciano will be back. I asked about him, and Noah was really quick to say he'll be back this week. Joseph Nane also will be back. I think Donaciano is the preferred option there in the eight. I think Gomez has done well just to play smart, honestly, keep good formation. He's playing like he wants a job, you know, and I will take 11 guys who are playing like they want a job. Even before this, though, I think that midfield role was one we talked about that we were thinking there could be more creativity there. I think Donaciano is that guy. But he's the only guy. So what do you do around him?
Well, unless you find a way to put Mefeka into the midfield, right? I mean, that's the thing. Like, we've got a bunch of guys who can play in a lot of different positions, and it just kind of looks like maybe at the moment everyone's kind of playing in their second position out of necessity because the roster is a little bit lopsided. And moving Rito to the front line is one way to deal with that. And maybe that is the long-term solution. It sounds to me that we're all still a little skeptical. We'll see. It's working right now, but the Roots have scored 14 goals on the season, and 10 of them have come in three games. So, like, when it's good, it's good. But we haven't seen a ground-out result, with the exception maybe of the 1-0 win over New Mexico United. That's I think the kind of the other thing we want to see having now that things have been shuffled around a little bit. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that's kind of the sense I've gotten from talking to you guys from this discussion right here, that things looked really good in the last two games, but there were circumstances in the Roots' favor, and that's not going to last much longer. And we're all a little bit like, wait and see about how things go in the next few games. Now, if they come out on the other side of this next stretch, which is going to be brutal, right? We mentioned this already. Away at Sacramento, home against Loyal, away against Switchbacks, away against Phoenix Rising. Like, that is tough. That is a lot of really quality opponents all right in a row, right? Sacramento hasn't lost yet this season. They're 6-3-0. They've scored 17 goals and surrendered three. I mean, come on.
Yeah, it's unreal.
It's outrageous. Yeah. San Diego, 5-2-3. Colorado, 5-1-4. Phoenix, after a very sluggish start to the season, is now in a playoff position, which is frustrating for a lot of reasons, obviously. But they've kind of started to turn it around and will be going to Phoenix, right? This is an interesting stretch. This is going to be the real test for the changes, and we'll see.
Well, you know, Formella wants one. You know, he's going to want one against this team.
That's the one change that doesn't, that, like, oh yeah, that makes plenty of sense. Like, Formella in that sort of withdrawn number nine role, perfect, great. And I think maybe this is why Rito makes sense in the right wing currently. The point of a withdrawn nine is that your wingers run ahead of him, but it still is. It doesn't feel like the greatest use of Rito's strengths.
Well, I do, you know, if you made me say where I think that's going to be the most useful. It's against teams that are going to come out and play against us. Yeah. You know, Sacramento is not going to play scared against us at home. And that means as long as we don't fuck it up, Rito is going to have a lot of space to run. We just need to make sure it's not when we're down three goals. The one piece of news about Sacramento that makes that game maybe a little less scary is that Rodrigo Lopez is out, I think maybe for the season. Mm-hmm. And in the two games since he went out, Sacramento have conceded two of their three goals conceded on the season. And they have a 1-1 draw away at Tulsa, and Tulsa are not good, right? Tulsa are bad. And they have
a whole bunch of confidence now.
And they have a 3-1 home win over Indy 11, which is, of course, worse than the Roots 3-1 away win over Indy 11. but, you know, I mean, also Sacramento play Orange County midweek.
Yeah.
So, you know, if they put 11 past Orange County or whatever you would expect them to do, then I'll walk this back some. But, you know, it's like if it turns out that Sacramento are just not as good without Lopez, the signs are already there that that is the case. But, you know, it's not the team you want to see the Roots going up against when they're trying to build some momentum. What's a good run out of the next four games? I mean, I feel like 5 points is acceptable and 7 points is good, as bleak as that is to say.
That sounds right to me.
Like five points is probably a playoff pace against these four teams.
Against these four teams. Yeah, especially since three of the four are on the road. And it's not like it's a long trip to Sacramento or anything. I mean, you'll probably get stuck in traffic, but it's not a long trip. You get to sleep in your own bed, but you know, it's never easy to go on the road and to play a bunch of quality teams all right in a row like this. I think you're right. Dropping point or losing, having only one loss, which is what would be the case if we got 5 or 7 points out of this, would tell you a lot about where this team is.
Yeah, I think you're happy with five. I think you're happy especially if you go into Phoenix, beat them for a multitude of reasons, former coach, but also they are in direct line as playoff competition right now. You can somewhat say the same thing with Colorado. I mean, even San Diego, you know, that's the one where we have a game in hand and they are 2 points ahead of us. So Roots are good against San Diego. They've only lost one time. That was the first time they played them in Las Positas. So
that's a wild fact, because San Diego has been, maybe they're demoralized by the fact that they got passed over for MLS or something, but San Diego has been a really good team the entire time the Roots have been in USL, and to only lose the one game that was played in Livermore. That's crazy.
It's funny. Like if you looked at the Roots record against Orange County and against San Diego, and you had to pick which team goes with which record, you definitely get it backwards. The Roots are still like well under 500 against Orange County.
All right, let's talk specifically what we think we're going to see on the pitch against Sacramento this weekend. John, why don't you take the first stab at this?
I'm going to say we see the same lineup except for Gomez. I think it'll either be Nane or Cozy next to him. We're doing score predictions now too. I'm going to go, it's going to be mayhem. I'm going to say it's 1-0, grind it out and just torture the whole way.
We don't have to ask which team John is predicting gets a 1-0 win, because he has never predicted anything but a Roots win ever.
Yes. Consistency. That's how we do it. I back my team.
Yeah, well, when you say that, I sound like a real asshole when I predict 2-0 Sacramento. the Roots get a couple chances that make us not totally despondent, but this is not where we get any of the 5 to 7 points we collect in the next four games.
Where do we though? Where do they collect them?
Well, the other three games.
The win at Phoenix and two draws.
Okay.
Or the win at Colorado. And that's probably the safer money, but my heart says Phoenix. I think that Colorado aren't as good as they seem, but, you know, please lose this clip later in the season when they're second on the table. I think you're dead on with the lineup. I would say Koze over Nane. I don't think any other changes.
One of the things that I do respect about Noah as a coach is that he's very deliberate with the changes that he makes. You know, it's not a lot of knee-jerk stuff. He tries something, he's going to stick with it a couple of matches to see how it's actually working. You know, I think we've seen that. I would have preferred, you know, there were earlier in the season, I would have preferred to see, I think, Hackshaw in a little bit sooner, you know, but he liked what was working and he was going to stick with it and work Hackshaw in at his pace. I respect that. I think it's a much better approach than just throwing stuff at the wall long-term, even if short-term, sometimes it can be frustrating. So long way of saying, I don't see a whole lot of changes either. I feel like this match against Sacramento though, I'm seeing something like that 3-3 draw we had last year, that just high flying, everyone's having a good time. It's one of those things that I think it'll let you know the roots are here to stay. You know, if they can hang with Sacramento, you can hang with pretty much anyone in this league. And I also think, I think this is a match in which Tomakis as the wingback makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. Because we talked about this a lot last year, that Sacramento also run that back three. They have very physical wingbacks. And Oakland couldn't handle it last year. You know, they had a tough time with Sacramento because I think it's Viadere and Jack Gurr were just more physical. They were able to push Azokad and Rito back in a way that really hamstrung what Oakland was trying to do on offense. I think having Tomakis, you say he likes to get forward. The thing is, he doesn't like to get forward nearly as much as Rito. It is not as important to the offense for Tomakis to be moving forward with the ball at all times. And I think that Oakland is probably better prepared because of that little shift in the lineup for this particular matchup. That said, Sacramento's really good. They've been giving up goal. They haven't been giving up goals. They've been giving up goal. But I still think, you know, this team loves to play against Sacramento. It is always fun, right? And we've had nine matches with this team since joining the USL, including the cup match earlier this year. And it's been, they've all been nail biters. I don't see any reason why this one would be different. All right. Well, we'll see you somewhere in the Bay Area this weekend. If we don't see you at a bar, presumably we'll see you at Sacramento if you've got the time and the ability to get there. It's not that far away. Great away game to go to. Maybe the attendance will impress certain professional trolls on Twitter. It's hard to say. So whether we see you in Sacramento or somewhere in the East Bay this weekend, up the roots.